the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
By the way, this connection is phenomenal. So,
oh, good. Good. I mean, I am in the studio. Like, I am in the full setup. I made sure my morning show guy, like, walked me through it before I left, which is a terrible thing because I was always a talent. And so to, like, really have no way around a studio is so hard for me now. So
this is the Sound Off Podcast with Matt Kundel. Broadcast talk in Sound Off mode.
This week, we take on the millennials. We'll be speaking with Leslie Scott, who's the program director at 107.7 The End in Seattle. While most radio stations are steering away from millennials, this station is sailing right into the millennial shitstorm and succeeding. The Sound Off podcast is brought to you by OvernightRadio.com. They've been delivering high-end commercial productions for stations and companies at budget-friendly rates since 1998. Whether it's 60s, 30s, 15s, blinks, or jingles, get high-quality production at OvernightRadio.com.
The Sound Off podcast is a listener and industry-driven podcast designed to inspire the creation of better broadcasting. When you advertise on the Sound Off podcast, you get your message into the ears of other broadcasters and out in front of our Facebook fans, Twitter followers, and website visitors. Unlike traditional media campaigns that expire, your ad remains a part of the podcast episode forever. For a rate card, email soundoff at mattkundel.com and get heard.
Now, the Sound Off podcast presents Remedial Media. Because there are segments of the broadcast industry that just need it.
You know, one day we're going to look back at this era and wonder, A, why did we worry so much about millennials? And B, why did everyone use the same background music to try to get their points across on YouTube?
Meet Ben. Ben is a senior executive and a baby boomer. Ben has a challenge. He isn't quite sure how to communicate with his millennial employees. But Ben knows he has to learn how. By 2025, nearly two-thirds of the workforce will be Gen Y. Leaders like Ben need to channel this generation's unique qualities into business results. But there are quite a few myths out there about millennials. Myth number one, they're distracted multitaskers who can't focus on the big picture. Millennials are digital natives. They grew up with technology and know how to toggle between tasks quickly. Research suggests that technology has actually reshaped the way the brains of young people work. Just because they're agile doesn't mean they aren't focused. Myth number two, they only know how to communicate through social media. Leaders like Ben are worried that Gen Yers waste their time on social networks, but because of their social nature, millennials actually crave teamwork and collaboration. Leaders can use this collaborative spirit to benefit the organization. Myth number three, they're entitled trophy kids. It's true. Most millennials grew up with hands-on parents and an everybody-wins culture, but that just means they're used to guidance. Millennials want mentoring, and leaders who mentor will engage them. Myth number four, they're non-committal and have slackitude. Yes, millennials are expected to have more jobs over their lifetime than any other generation, but they'll commit to an organization that communicates a clear purpose and vision and feeds their desire to be part of something bigger. So how do Ben and other leaders communicate with millennials in the workplace? Here are five tips. Number one, use a variety of communication channels. Email is so 10 years ago for this group. Use blogs, social networks, and videos to communicate. Number two, share your vision. Get them engaged by being clear about where you're going and help them understand their role in your strategy. Number three, let them toggle and use that skill to help your company drive innovation. Number four, encourage collaboration. Create physical spaces for teams to work collaboratively. Number five, provide mentoring and coaching. Share your purpose and passion and the values that have defined you as a leader. You'll connect with them on a deeper level.
That video was lifted without permission from the YouTube page of Joel Goldstein. who's an author, speaker, and consultant who works with leaders and is clearly trying to get them to understand a little bit more about millennials. When I blogged last winter about the opportunity I had to meet with millennials about their radio usage, all except one listened to the radio. But that person admitted she was a musician and would love to have her music on the radio. When pressed about why they listened or what they listened to, they admitted to being indifferent to what radio had to offer. Or they listened passively because mom and dad were in the car. Now, I've got teenagers who drive. They spend the first minute in the car marrying the phone to the car system, generally so they can play back music that they can't get on the radio. And I think back how times have changed and, well, I thought back to 1987 when I got to use my dad's Audi for the weekend. And in went the cassette. Oh, and by the way, this isn't a Led Zeppelin cassette I put into the player. Because in 1987, I could get Zeppelin on the radio. If you listen closely to all the things that are being said about millennials, it sounds exactly like it was with Generation X. Moving on from one mick job to another. Disloyal. Lazy. Living at home. Since the invention of television, radio has had the same challenge it's always had. How to deal with the new generation and their new technology. It's the same battle that's been going on since the early 50s when television arrived. Same issue as the Sony Walkman. And then we managed to get the CD player in the car and we had to deal with that too. Yes, there are more toys that distract than ever before. But are you really doing your station a favor by sailing away from it all?
KNDD and KNDD HD1 Seattle. From the Zero Emission Studio, New Music Discovery, and the 2-Minute Promise. We play half the commercials of the other Seattle stations and never more than 2 minutes at a time. 107.7 The End, Seattle's New Music Discovery.
Leslie Scott is the program director of 107.7 The End in Seattle. The alternative station started in 1991 in the throes of the grunge movement. In June of 2014, they committed to their millennial audience by, wait for it, playing less commercials and more great music. It's something that radio stations have said they've done for years, but here's one that actually put it into practice. Leslie Scott joins us from 107.7 The End in Seattle. Leslie, when did you know you wanted to be in radio?
I knew when I was 15. My grandfather owned an advertising agency and my mother worked for him and they got me all of the free tickets I could ever ask for. I was a pretty music hungry 15-year-old, into pop culture, but always really into alternative music. And I got really lucky that I got to go to like all the best concerts. And so at one point, my grandfather started talking about selling the business. He was getting older, was looking to maybe start, you know, retiring. And I thought to myself, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to get free tickets? My life is over. And I started thinking about it and thinking, you know, I really do love music. So maybe radio is where I want to be. I can just go straight to the source of the free tickets. And I started as an intern in St. Louis in high school and have been really lucky to work my way up from there.
What was your relationship with radio growing up?
Oh, I was obsessed. Are you kidding? I was actually thinking about this the other day that there was she was probably a part-timer, you know, it was the 90s. She probably wasn't voice tracked overnight, you know, probably just like part-time overnight woman who like I fell in love with because I would wake up really early in the morning and, you know, to like go to school and she would still be on before the morning show. And like right when I got email and when email became a thing, like I would email her all the time, which like now looking back on it was probably creepy. But I loved everything about radio. I loved the personalities. I loved hearing new music. I used to call and request the same song over and over and over and over again. So like I totally, you know, I feel for the texters who text in, like, I just want to hear the song over and over and over. Like, I hear you. I get it. I have done it. I have lived it. I was just obsessed from a very, very early age.
And what songs were you requesting?
The one time that I'm thinking of was PJ Harvey's Down by the Water. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
That one just struck a chord with me very early. But otherwise, growing up, I was a Ben Folds 5 fan, a Dave Matthews Band fan, you know, sort of in that hot AC alternative world for the most part. Though, you know, we all had our moments in loving Limp Bizkit. I'll admit it. It happened. It was a thing that happened. I'm sorry about it, but it happened.
But you're not a grunge kid. You didn't grow up in the grunge era. It was a little after that, though, right?
Yeah, I sort of found my footing a little after that. You know, I certainly knew Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Green Day, because, you know, people in my age group were listening to it. Friends in my classes, they had older brothers and sisters who were listening to it. So I was hip to it, but I didn't find the passion until, you know, a few years after that.
And tell me about your first radio job.
First radio job, official first radio job, was in Madison, Wisconsin at WMAD. The second time WMAD was alternative, and I was there about 8 months before they flipped it to country. And it is still country over 10 years later. So that was, you know, clearly the right move for them. And it's been like the number one station in the market. And, you know, they've had great success. But it was definitely hard to get out of college where I'd been working at a college radio station, WPGU in Champaign, Illinois, that I love very much, to get that first job and in a top 100 market and doing alternative. It was all these things I wanted to do. And then 3 days before Christmas, they were like, well, we're going to flip to country. And I said, okay, cool. Now I'm officially in radio. I'm told I'm officially in radio because I've now lost a job. So it was a rude awakening for sure at 23.
So a lot of people listening to this podcast are going to think, why am I asking you about your roots in radio and your relationship with music? Because it gets down to why I wanted you to have on the podcast today. And tell me about the first time you started to encounter digital and that sort of level of discovery where, oh, this is going to change radio. When was that moment for you?
I had a MySpace page, you know, maybe 2005, 2006. And I was working at a station in Savannah, Georgia at the time. And, you know, I think we were just sort of talking amongst ourselves like, oh, MySpace, MySpace. And, you know, one of us said like, well, we should probably have a MySpace page for the station. You know, does anybody do that yet? We might as well just make one. And that was sort of the first time that, you know, I'd thought about, well, this is a brand that I am involved with and people want to connect with this brand in this new thing called social media on MySpace at the time. And that was the beginning. And then I got more interested in email marketing and different ways that we can reach our audience other than using, you know, the frequency itself. And so I've sort of grown from there, but digital was not my first love in radio. You know, I always loved the songs and what came between the songs. And so this has now been another layer on my overall understanding of, you know, how we make radio great.
But you've also worked mornings. You've worked a whole bunch of other positions inside the radio station.
I have. Mornings, that was hard. I've done every day part except for afternoons, including overnights. I've been a music director. I've been a promotions director. I've been a program director, assistant program director. I've been very lucky to have all sorts of experiences and to learn from each one of them. And I became digital program director a few years ago here in Seattle, which was really interesting because it was at a time where people were sort of, you know, starting to figure out in this industry that content marketing matters, that digital marketing matters. And, you know, there are other industries who have been doing these things. And in fact, the content marketing industry is sort of one unto itself at this point. But I was able to take my knowledge and my passion for marketing and basically playing around on the internet and looking at trends and turn that into a position here over our four stations to say, you know, how can we be doing this better? What can we do to make a difference and to reach more fans? Because there is a whole world out here on the so-called internet. I think it's a thing that's going to be around for a little while. And, you know, how can we embrace it and how can we reach our fans where they already are?
Was it a lonely existence being in the digital department when you were going through radio? Do you feel like you're the only one who's sort of reading from the digital mantra while everybody else is speaking a different language?
I'm lucky that I've had, you know, really good support in this building, especially from you know, managers all the way through to, you know, digital campaign managers. Like I've found that this place specifically is very forward thinking when it comes to the importance of digital. But, you know, I've always had a few, wherever I've been, I've had a few kindred spirits who, you know, will help me fight the good fight when it comes to, well, no, I think we should have a blog on this website. Or no, why don't we have a Facebook page for this radio station? Those kinds of things. I've certainly had people along the way to you know, sort of push and prod and help and support, which is, you know, really important to have gotten where I am today.
What do you look for in talent for their contribution to the digital side of things? Beyond they do their show, what would you expect from them after that?
Well, during their show and after their show, first and foremost, I expect our talent to be authentic. Like, I want them to be who they are, because who they are is what matters, and that's what people want to hear. You know, no one, especially in the millennial generation, like, they don't want to hear bullshit. We all just want to be talked to like human beings who respect one another. And so, first and foremost, you know, on the air and on social, like, talk about what you're doing. Talk about who you are. Talk about what's important to you. You know, if you're out doing something in Seattle, share that with us. If you're traveling around the world, share that with us. I mean, everybody has their boundaries and their limits. And, you know, I never want to push a talent to share something they're not comfortable sharing. But I also have, you know, really encouraged our team to sort of step outside their boundaries in places that they are, that they can learn to be comfortable. Because in the end, it's a better way to forge a connection with a listener and a fan, because the more that you show about your life, the more you look like a real person, and it gives more facets for someone to glom onto and say, hey, I'm like that person, and I like that person because they're doing, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Where do you find talent these days?
Man, that's a good one. It is getting tougher. We just have to keep looking. There's good talent out there. I think that, you know, it's up to all of us in radio and as programmers to start to grow that talent, to take time with that talent. You know, there are plenty of creative people out there who are great behind a mic, but who maybe have never had the opportunity for a real air check. And, you know, I've been in small markets. I get that there are programmers who are programming four stations and don't have time to air check their, you know, their entire staff, every week, let alone every month. But I do think that it's important for program directors to start identifying the young talent in their buildings and saying, you know, I think that this person could really be something, and to work to grow that person, because we need that talent pool. There are plenty of great talent out there now, but, you know, who's the talent in 5 years? Who's the talent in 10 years? Who's going to be the ones to communicate to the next generation of radio fans? And that's something that, you know, we really have to be thinking about and that we're all responsible for.
Tell me about the 2-minute promise that you guys have. It even has its own hashtag.
It does, cleverly. Yeah. Hashtag 2-minute promise.
Has it worked? Are people reacting to it? And what's been the feeling?
The 2-minute promise has been awesome. It's something that we started about 2.5 years ago when, you know, we were looking at commercial loads and we were looking at what our audience has said about radio. And, you know, you hear it all the time. People say, well, I don't want to listen to commercials. You play too many commercials. I like the music, but then I have to sit through the commercials and I don't do that. And so we thought, you know, what can we do to flip the script a little bit and to play more music, to make sure that our advertisers get their share of voice with this really important audience who has a ton of spending money at this point, and make a difference, you know, in what we're doing in Seattle. And the 2-minute promise was born, and it's really been incredible to see how people react to it. You know, obviously, like, we get to play more music, which is helpful, being such a new music driven station. But it's also been very interesting from the advertising perspective, because I've had people come up to me and, like, this is totally true. I have had people come up to me when, you know, we've met just out on a Saturday night, friends of friends, say, oh, you work for The End. You have that 2-minute promise. Do you know that I actually listen to commercials now because, you know, I just know that you'll get back to music in just a few minutes. Like, that never, ever happens. Like, where else in the world? Like, no program director ever has had somebody come up and say, like, oh, I listened to your commercials. So the fact that that's happening for us is an incredible thing. It's such a cool case study just for, you know, not only the power of radio with this generation, they are still listening and they do still care, but also that, you know, advertisers can still be heard and can still make a difference. And you know, if it's in the right, if it's written the right way and if it's targeted the right way, you know, this audience still wants to hear about things going on and you know, goods and services that are important to their lives.
There's an Australian company, and I know a Canadian company did this as well. They also put in a 2-minute promise about 10, 12 years ago. What they did not do, though, was cut the overall inventory. So how much cutting to your inventory did you have to do in order to really succeed with the promise to make millennials believe, yeah, it's going to be 2 minutes and I'm going to get a whole bunch of music after this?
We play half the commercials of any station in Seattle. So we really did. We cut the inventory by a lot. And we take 2-minute breaks throughout the hour, but we really do try to maintain a music presence on the station. And, you know, knock wood, so far it's working for us.
So safe to assume that there's some clients who are happy with this, but did you come up with any clients who are like, well, I just need the spot to play 5 times an hour and you can't give me that anymore? Do you have other solutions?
There was definitely some pushback in the beginning, and I'm very thankful that I work on the programming side and not in our sales department at the beginning of the 2-minute promise, because this is a different thing and it's a different thing for the buying community to understand. But you know, what we really thought about in all of this is, yes, we're playing fewer commercials. We have less inventory. So how else can we give value to our partners? And that came through, you know, a lot of this digital stuff. It comes through endorsements. It comes through events. We have a whole 360 outlook on the way that the end as a brand can connect our partners and our fans.
It's only fitting that this takes place in Seattle. There's more millennials there than a number of other cities across America. I believe it's top 5. And I also pulled some crazy numbers. 4% of the millennials come in contact with at least $350,000 a year in Seattle. So they're rich as well.
Yeah, there's some money. It's pretty crazy.
So tell me about Millennial Lab.
Millennial Lab was the brainchild, again, of our sales team. And we have a sales manager here who focuses on millennials. And what we wanted to do is make sure that the buying community knows that millennials matter and that, you know, millennials have money to spend and that they aren't just living at home with their parents in their basement and that they're, you know, they're only using Uber and they're not buying cars. Because I think that, you know, as with any young generation, there's always going to be some, you know, negative press, let's say. And that just isn't the case. When you look at the millennial generation, they're anywhere from 18 to 35 years old. That's a really big age span. Like somebody who's 18 is going through completely different, you know, life experiences as someone who's 35. And so what we wanted to make sure to do is to put out the positive press. There are so many good stories about millennials, not just for, you know, advertisers to see, but for like the world to see that we really are making a difference as a generation. And yeah, someone who's 20 might be living at home with their parents because they might be still in college. Whereas somebody who's 33 may have just bought their first home, may have gotten married this year, may have bought 2 cars in the past 2 years. You know, like they are really experiencing life as a consumer. Not to mention that 20-year-old who's living at home probably has a job and is probably, you know, buying concert tickets, buying clothes, going out to eat, you know, experiencing life that way. So Millennial Lab was established to share those stories, to make sure that, you know, we are getting information across about millennials in, you know, the best light possible.
How about music? What's the one thing that's really changed from the time you listened to music as opposed to now, the way they either digest it or the types of songs that they listen to?
Oh, my gosh. What hasn't changed? I mean, I remember going to the record store in the mall and buying my, you know, CDs at that time and, you know, buying like the top three CDs of the week, whatever it was, and going home and paging through the liner notes and looking at the artwork, and just the experience of having that physical item was so important to me. I still have like way too many CDs for living in an apartment in, you know, in Seattle in an urban area. Like they're everywhere and it's too much. But you know, people now don't use physical media that way. It's going to YouTube. It's going to Spotify. It's carrying all your music on your phone with you. And that is so different and something that I've had to adjust to just over the years, because as someone who grew up with physical media, it was my natural inclination to say, well, I, you know, hold on, let me listen to that on CD. Let me grab the CD player for that. Whereas now, you know, I've gotten more used to, okay, I've pulled it up on my phone. I, you know, let me go listen to it on YouTube, whatever that is. And I do also think that with that, you know, we've gone away a little bit from the album culture and we're back in a singles culture. You know, when's the last time you heard someone sit down and really say like, oh, I took in that whole album from front to back, and boy, you know, even though I loved the first song, by the fifth song, I really started to feel the message of the band and I was really engulfed in this feeling. Like, it just doesn't happen that much anymore. You know, you have to really be a fan of a band to sit down and experience the album the way the artist has created it, which, you know, I hate to say, but I do think that, you know, younger generations, when they're just punching through YouTube or punching through Spotify, they're just flipping around. They're playing the songs that matter to them. They're not necessarily listening to a whole collection from an artist.
You've got some of the most passionate fans in radio. When a listener calls the program director, what are they saying to you?
We have the most passionate fans and it's awesome. The end's been around for 25 years as of this year, which is, it's incredible. The history that we have, you know, just on the station and in the hallways, you know, the hallways here are lined with plaques and we have all these archives and it's really, really special. So, you know, I have people who reach out to me for all kinds of requests just from, you know, maybe they grew up in Seattle and they moved away and they've moved back and they're curious about where somebody went who's been off the station for 10 years, but to them, that person was the end. And so, you know, why aren't we playing this band anymore? Or what happened to this personality? So I do get a lot of those questions. I, you know, of course, always get the song request. You know, we have Seattle is a very music friendly town and there's always people who, you know, want to hear a band that I've never heard of or that, you know, maybe I've heard of and I just didn't know that they had the groundswell of support that maybe they do. So, you know, certainly get a lot of, can you play this? Are you playing this? Will you play this? That kind of stuff. And then there's always, you know, there's always the people who want to hear less Nirvana or, you know, less whatever, because that's the way of the world. And, you know, and then we get the people who say, how come you don't play more Nirvana? And I just want to put those two people on an email thread together and say, okay, just go at it. Like, you want to hear more Nirvana, you want to hear less Nirvana, you guys figure this out and let me know.
My program director I work with back in 1993 actually did that, but he didn't do it with email, obviously. He did it on a phone call. He conferenced the person who wanted to hear more grunge with the person who wanted to hear less grunge, and he let them go at it.
That's incredible. Yeah. And I wish that would have been on tape somewhere.
So what's the relationship like with grunge music and your audience? The End was born out of grunge music in 1991. It thrived because of it, and Soundgarden and Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam all throughout the 90s. But when I look at the playlist today and really when I hear what the music is like sonically, it has very little to do with grunge.
Well, you know, we move on through time and music changes, new music trends change and update. We're a station that, you know, prides itself on new music discovery, and we certainly owe a debt of gratitude to grunge. And we you know, we play Pearl Jam, we play Nirvana, we play the Foo Fighters, play Soundgarden. I mean, you do hear those on the station, but we really have, you know, cemented ourselves in the 2000s. This is a station for, you know, people in their 20s and 30s, and something that, you know, we want to make sure that we're serving that community. And some of those people weren't even born when Nevermind came out, which is crazy to me, but it is. That's the fact.
Yeah, well, I was looking at your playlist, and not, of course, I can't divulge any secrets because, well, you're playing all the secrets on the radio. But a band like Third Eye Blind has more in common with today's music than the grunge did. And I guess if we'd sort of had this conversation back in the 90s, we'd say, no way that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Except that Third Eye Blind writes some great pop-leaning songs, and, you know, things are just a little bit poppier now. But, like, for real, Third Eye Blind has this crazy resurgence of a fan base, and I saw them at Bumbershoot in September, and they had, like, 10,000 fans out there. I mean, people still love Third Eye Blind. So, Stephen Jenkins, shout out to you for writing some timeless classics, I guess. But no, I mean, never. And never when I got to Seattle would I have thought that, you know, Third Eye Blind made more sense on the end than Nirvana, because I figured I was coming to Seattle and I was going to, you know, get to hear Nirvana all the time, Pearl Jam all the time. But, you know, again, like, things change and trends change, and we've moved from Nirvana here in Seattle to Modest Mouse and Death Cab for Cutie. And that's a different vibe. It's a different flavor. And so if we're using those as our pillars of great Pacific Northwest music, you know, the sounds are going to be a little bit different than they were, you know, 25 years ago.
I absolutely love Third Eye Blind, by the way, but all my coworkers back in the 90s, I was the music director at a rock station, but I got made fun of for liking that band. And it feels good to know in the end I was right.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people agree with you.
Tell me about some of the events that the station has throughout the year, because we talked about monetizing on air, but what about some of the things that you do to monetize off-site?
Well, so we have three signature events on the end that we're very proud of. The biggest, which is coming up in just a few weeks, is Deck the Hall Ball. And that is actually going into its 25th year next year. So that'll be big and exciting. But that's like our big end of the year festival. It's, you know, it's a big celebration before we all head off to, you know, celebrate the holidays. We also have summer camp in August, and that started maybe less than 10 years ago. And the impetus behind summer camp is that we are all about new music discovery. And so how can we get these bands to Seattle so that people can see them and experience them? You know, you hear a new band on the radio, but you don't really know what they're about necessarily, unless you take the time to, you know, find out more about them. But this way, we put, you know, all these bands together. It used to be a one-day festival. This year, we expanded it to 2 days. And we do it at this great location, great venue called Marymore Park. And everyone, you know, takes their shoes off and they lay their blankets down and they dance and they soak up the sun. You know, hopefully it's sunny. sometimes it's rainy. But you know what? We fight through that here in Seattle. And it's just this great vibe of new music and, you know, people being together outside. And another event like that is one we do in May called the Taco Truck Challenge, which was born out of an idea of a former promotions director who just really liked taco trucks and was like, what if we just put a bunch of taco trucks together in a park and had people come eat and drink and, you know, maybe listen to some music? It's the idea is so basic, but it is so much fun. And it's really one of my favorite events of the year because, you know, we have a few bands play, we have a margarita garden, you have like 30 taco trucks lining this park. And it's usually around one of the first nice weekends of the year because, you know, it takes a little while for the sun to come out in Seattle. So, you know, end of April, beginning of May, things start to clear up a little bit. And you just cross your fingers that Saturday, you know, is going to be one of the first beautiful Saturdays. And again, people come out. I'm really big into people like taking their shoes off in the grass and having a good time. And that's, you know, that Taco Truck Challenge is one of those events. And at the end, we crown a Taco Truck Challenge, or crown a Taco Truck, you know, king, basically. And, you know, there's a silly trophy. And who doesn't love things with silly trophies?
You've got half a day left, assuming, of course, that you're going to leave at 6 o'clock tonight. What do you have left to do for the rest of today?
I have a sales meeting. You know, we sit in a sales idea session once a week just to make sure that clients are being, you know, served in the right way that makes sense for not just my station, but for all the other stations in our building as well. I have some air checking to do with actually a young talent that, you know, I think could grow into something here on the station. And And actually, we're bidding farewell today to one of our longtime staff members who's been with the station 10 years on the event side. He's moving on, so we are going to go toast him, and I'm going to duck out a little early to do that. So full disclosure.
Excellent. Hey, Leslie, thanks a lot for taking the time to join us on the Sound Off podcast. When it comes to anything millennial, we're sure to give you a call.
Please do. Thanks so much, Matt.
Talent, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, sales, likes, follows, analytics, downloads. What does it have to do with radio these days? Everything. Move your radio station to the future with talent coaching and a digital strategy that works. Here's John Helm from 97.5 The River in Kamloops, British Columbia.
Matt Kundle worked with our talent on all day parts to ensure we were targeting our key demographics. He also provided us with the digital strategy. He showed everyone in our cluster how best to use each platform.
For a free consultation, contact Matt online at mattkundle.com.
And that's the podcast for this week. The show has been brought to you by OvernightRadio.com, delivering high-end commercials for stations and companies at budget-friendly rates. Also by MattKundleVoice.ca. Quotes delivered in hours for narrations, videos, imaging for radio stations, podcasts, and more.
The Sound Off Podcast was produced by Evan Cerminski and recorded in the master studio of MattKundleVoice.com. Please rate and review episodes. It will help others find the show. To advertise on the podcast, email soundoff@mattkundle.com or download a rate card from the website and follow us and like us wherever great social media content is shared.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
Looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.